Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Bridget A. Apong, MD, a surgical oncologist and deputy director of the Center for Cancer Health Equity at The Ohio State University Comprehensive Cancer Center, James, as well as a professor in the Division of Surgical Oncology at The Ohio State University College of Medicine. Dr. Apong joined us to talk about racial disparities in breast cancer. Although breast cancer mortality rates have steadily declined over the past few decades, Black women with breast cancer are still 40% more likely to die from their disease than white women, according to the 2022 American Cancer Society update on female breast cancer statistics in the United States. Additionally, of all racial and ethnic groups, Black women have the lowest 5-year survival rate for all molecular subtypes and stages of disease other than stage 1. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Apong discussed factors that contribute to the ongoing disparity in breast cancer deaths among Black women versus white women, the importance of increased access to high-quality screening, and the need for policymakers and healthcare systems to leverage more inclusive research efforts to close the gaps in breast cancer diagnosis and care. Today, we're going to be discussing a bit about disparities in cancer care, specifically those that exist for Black women with breast cancer. A recent study revealed that Black women have a 40% higher breast cancer death rate versus white women. So could you expand on the significance and importance of these findings for both clinicians and patients?
Absolutely. So we've seen these disparities, we've seen these data for decades now. And what the most recent press release tells us is that despite sort of longstanding efforts to reduce these disparities, that they do exist, right? So the highlights of last week's press release from the American Cancer Society are that, one, that overall all women are doing better as far as breast cancer survival. So that's wonderful news. There's overall, since 1989, there's been a steady decline in the total mortality due to breast cancer. However, what we do see still are these gaps. And that gap is most pronounced comparing Black or African-American women to white women. And what this equals is still about a 30% difference in mortality. So ultimately, Black women are more likely to die of breast cancer, regardless of the breast cancer type and also regardless of the breast cancer state. So there's a lot of work to do as far as reducing overall disparities and breast cancer differences.
The disparity in deaths has remained at 40% or higher for a decade. So what are some of the factors that may be contributing to this ongoing disparity?
So what we do see is that African-American women tend to present later or at a more advanced stage, right? So we see that breast cancer in general, the survival is higher if the woman presents at a earlier stage. So the stages are from 1 to 4. And unfortunately, the literature shows that Black women are still presenting more so at the stages 3 and 4, when it's more advanced and it's less likely to be cured. So this partially explains the increase in mortality. Access to treatment is an issue where Black women are not receiving treatment either as expeditiously, they're not receiving treatment as early, so there's a delay, or they're not completing treatment. So that, with that, we see outcome differentials if you're not adequately treated. We also see that Black women have increased risk of certain types of cancers that are more aggressive, most notably the triple negative subtype, which ultimately has a worse prognosis and is more treatment resistant to a lot of the therapies that we currently have available.
How could providers begin to address contributing factors and other things such as the racial biases that may be in place and disparities in access to screenings?
Well, ultimately, I think it's important for providers to be aware of these disparities. So you have to know the data and understand that, despite the advancement across the country and across all groups, that we still see these differences, number one. And after that, I think providers need to appreciate that there are social determinants of health that can impact, how a woman's breast cancer, how it's diagnosed, how the breast cancer is also treated. And the social determinants of health are the social, economic, and behavioral factors that contribute to anyone's health outcome, right? So when I see a breast cancer patient, I want to know if there's food insecurity, if there's housing insecurity, how's their insurance status? Is there stability with employment? Because all of those things we know are going to impact how they're going to proceed with the treatment, if they're going to complete their treatment, and how they're going to be able to access all the different levels of appointments, of treatments, of research options, all the things that we have available. So I think it's important that we see the patient in, in a more holistic form, all of the factors about that individual. And I think it takes some learning, if you will, or takes some, experience, because some of these questions may be difficult. I think as providers, as, for at least in my training as a medical school, what you want to do is put the patient at ease, that you're not going to treat them differently if they don't have a job, if they don't have insurance, like if they have certain socioeconomic difficulties. And I think I've had to sort of undo that training in somewhat, because I think the intention of us receiving that training in the early 2000s was to really increase the trust in the patient. So the patient can feel like, you know what, this doctor is going to take care of me regardless of all that I'm coming with. And that is 100% true. We do want that patient to have that comfort and that ease, right? But on the flip side of it, we do know that those, all of those factors, all of those sort of social and sometimes even personal details of any individual will impact their treatment. And not in an adverse way, but we know that it sometimes will create barriers as to the kind of treatments that they're willing to accept and the kind of treatments that they're able to complete. So certainly when it comes to African American patients who we know are at risk for having a worse outcome, we need to make sure that we do evaluate these social determinants of health and that we can provide interventions, right? So now if you tell me that, yes, I have, housing insecurity, for example, then, that gives me an opportunity to help you get to a social worker, help you get to some of our community resources that we have to help you. Because honestly, if you don't have a place to live, the last thing you're thinking about is perhaps your cancer treatment, right? We have to focus on sort of your overall environment so that we can help women get to their cancer treatments.
Specifically, could you speak to the importance of increased access to high quality screening and treatment for these patients?
Sure, absolutely. For decades, we've known about these disparities, and a huge area that we focused on is screening, right? Because breast cancer, we know women do better if the cancer is detected at an earlier stage. Until we have sort of a primary prevention strategy through a vaccine or some other modality, all we have is screening, right? As a way to prevent or at least catch things early, so that what we call medicine secondary prevention strategies, where you'll do better. There's a lot of opportunities, a lot of programs that we have to encourage breast cancer screening. And I think overall, we've done well when it comes to targeting the African American community, because we do know that that's a group that's been experiencing sort of the worst survival statistics over the years. At least in my institution, we have things like mobile mammography, we have navigators, we have participation in like the breast and cervical cancer. These are national programs that provide free screening to women who may not have insurance or have a lapse in their coverage. And all these things are very important. But ultimately, there are other factors beyond just access, I think, that prevent certain women or certain subgroups from obtaining screening, right? And I think a lot of that is that we have to also appreciate diversity within the African American population. When we say Black or African American, it can be African immigrants or Caribbean immigrants. There's a lot of diversity within the African American population. And I think moving forward, we need to appreciate what those differences are to in order to really understand why certain women are not obtaining screening. Because even if there's access, like I said, our program, we have a mobile van, for example, where we literally go into the communities to provide screening. And still there's some women who won't do it for, their own sort of fears of there being a finding that they don't want to deal with. Fears of, we hear a lot of myths. For example, women worry about, well, the mammogram is going to compress the breast, it's going to create a problem. They're worried about the discomfort of the mammograms. People feel like, well, I know someone that was doing well, and then all of a sudden they had a mammogram, then they became sick. So there's a lot of sort of myths that we need to address to overcome sort of some of the fears of obtaining screening. And again, access, it's still a concern. We need to make sure that women who are of screening age do obtain the necessary screening. So we need to think about things like Medicaid expansion, where we can increase the number of people who may be underinsured to go ahead and continue to get screening. We also need to ensure that we continue funding things like the breast and cervical cancer programs to go ahead and encourage screening. But we also need to address some of the cultural barriers, some of the stereotypes that, you know, will prevent a woman from obtaining screening, even if she's able to. So it may not be like there's not a facility in the area, but there are some other things that we need to explore. And I think definitely the research into that realm is lacking, and we can certainly do better.
Going forward, this study also showed that Black women have the lowest five-year breast cancer survival rate versus all other racial subgroups for every stage of diagnosis and breast cancer subtype. So are there perhaps any genetic differences that are contributing to these statistics?
It's definitely possible. A lot of the data when it comes to genetics were really obtained in samples that were not inclusive. So a lot of the earlier studies didn't include a lot of Black women. So there's definitely certain biologic differences that we just may not know of yet. There's also, keep in mind, I think a concern within the Black community of research participation. That's something I personally really try to encourage whenever I do outreach and engagement within the Black community, you know, to really normalize research, right, and scientific investigation. And I think a lot of times we do have a history where, you know, there's been some abuses within the scientific community. There's been things like the Tuskegee syphilis experiments, which, you know, and we all know of as a community. We're all very knowledgeable of some of these things. And I think it creates a lot of hesitancy with participation in research and participation in clinical trials. And the only way to answer the question, just like you asked, is through research, right? The only way to know if Black women's cancers are genetically somehow different from white women's, and that's potentially creating things like treatment resistance, for example, the only way to find that answer out is through research. And I think we have work to do in increasing the enrollment when it comes to minorities, especially African-Americans. And also the pandemic with COVID, I think we really saw the level of distrust that the Black community sometimes has when it comes to accepting science, when it comes to accepting some healthcare recommendations. You know, there was a lot of vaccine hesitancy. And I think, again, that all of that goes back to our history of us just not feeling comfortable, not feeling that we can trust science, especially when it's from the government, trust the healthcare system. So I think we need to continue to work on our community partnerships. You know, healthcare systems need to really work on engendering that trust so that we can make advancements and we can have more research that's inclusive.
What coordinated and concerted efforts can potentially be taken by people and institutions like policymakers and healthcare systems to assist in closing these gaps and addressing all of these issues?
Well, you know, we really need to continue the push to screening, you know, and we need to focus our efforts on populations that are sort of behind when it comes to mammography utilization. We know that, again, it's not just in general, not all Black populations, but certain subsets. You know, we know Black people who live in urban centers, for example, or conversely, Blacks in rural areas. Those two groups may have lower mammography utilization. You know, we also need to look at groups of like Black patients from certain immigrant groups, for example, you know, who maybe due to acculturation issues may be less likely to engage with the healthcare system. And I think all of those, unless we really tease out the diversity within a Black population, you know, it's going to be difficult to sort of bridge the gaps in screening. So that's one. And I think a second thing we need to do is, you know, sort of advocacy to increase coverage of screening. I know the Affordable Care Act did have some provisions to encourage insurers to provide coverage for screenings, but there are still patients who have some exorbitant costs. Like I said, our program, we have patients who, if they don't have any insurance, we can get them coverage from BCCP or the Breast and Cervical Cancer Program. But let's say patients who have insurance, but they may still have excessive copays because screening services are not covered 100%. And that's certainly prohibitive, especially in a population that's high risk. And so things like Medicaid expansion, for example, can be helpful. But just in general, making sure that all insurances know that screening is a necessity and that it should be covered, you know, at least have a pathway for patients to have it at a rate that's affordable. And lastly, we need to continue community engagement. You know, we need to make sure that things like navigation services, make sure that the community presence is encouraging the residents to continue with screening. You know, at Ohio State, we have an initiative called Back to Basics, and that's a mass media campaign focused in the state to really get people back out to screening. Because I think a lot of what the pandemic did is potentially take patients who were already under screened, were not screening at the rate where they should be, and to create additional barriers. Because again, we had lockdowns and facilities had to close, right? We had lockdowns, and we know that COVID, for example, disproportionately impacted people of lower socioeconomic status, disproportionately impacted the Black community and other minority communities. So our fear is that this is going to further worsen the divide, you know, so patients who are already underscreened now due to additional barriers due to the pandemic will be even less likely to get screening. So part of why we're pushing this mass media campaign is to encourage people that, okay, now the pandemic is at least under control. We need to get patients back out to start resuming their preventative services, start getting screening for breast cancer, as well as other cancers.
What would you say is a main message to impart to colleagues based on what we talked about today?
It's about knowledge base and awareness. These disparities, I think we hear of it a lot, and I think we need to appreciate that the situation is still the same, right? Because yes, everybody's doing better as with breast cancer, but again, that gap, that 40% mortality differential is still here with us. So we have a lot more work to do to make sure that we can provide care in an equitable fashion so that this disparity can be reduced, right? The other thing we need to do is to really make sure that we, as physicians, as you know, other healthcare providers, are up to date ourselves on the screening guidelines. And there's multiple guidelines. So, you know, whatever, whether it's the U.S. Preventive Task Force, NCCN, whatever guidelines any individual provider is utilizing, make sure that the patients are following through with them. And also just make sure that it's not just about the guidelines, but that screening really should be individualized, right? So African-American women are at higher risk of dying of breast cancer. And by the way, African-American women get diagnosed at younger ages. So I personally think that it's really important to get their personal history and their family history to individualize their screening. Because these are patients who you may want to start screening even before the recommended age 40 or 50, you know, depending on the guidelines that you're adhering to. And the other thing is that African-American women, I think, have underutilized genetic testing, because again, a lot of the data on the genes that predispose women to breast cancer, including the BRCA 1 and 2, and some of the newer ones, a lot of that research was done in populations that did not include a lot of African-American women, right? So I think previously there was a bias among providers that Black women did not have a high carriage rate of these mutations. But actually, we have since have data that establishes that certainly Black women can be carriers of these mutations, and that there is a certain familial predisposition, and that it actually may make sense to start screening Black women younger even than the recommended ages, or at least get them to counseling. You know, make sure that they know the family history, make sure that they are also obtaining genetic counseling and are obtaining testing.
Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about with this topic that we haven't already touched on?
First of all, thank you so much for, you know, bringing awareness, because I think that's really key. I mean, you know, we need awareness when it comes to the healthcare providers in the healthcare system, but we also need awareness for the individual patient. So Black patients need to know that they are at risk. I still hear to this day, you know, Black women say, well, you know, we're less likely to get breast cancer. You know, it's more white women. And that's not true. You know, and not only is that not true, but we're also more likely to die of breast cancer when we do get it. So it's not something that we can afford to be ignorant on at this stage. So I thank you and your organization for providing that. And the other thing is that we also need to really increase the advocacy, because again, I've seen it in other cancer sites, for example, in prostate cancer. And I think we need to start thinking along those lines for breast cancer and start doing the research to see if it's worth screening Black women at younger ages, you know, because again, we're more likely to be diagnosed at younger ages, we're more likely to have more aggressive cancer, and also we're more likely to have what we call interval cancers, right? So cancers that develop between screenings. So, you know, we need to be cognizant before we generalize screening, especially the U.S. Preventive Task Force, for example, where they recommend starting at age 50. Because, I mean, I personally, as a breast surgeon, I have plenty of young, particularly Black female patients. This is a population that you're recommending to start even later, start at 50. And also the frequency, you want them to have screening every 2 years. I mean, I think there's a tremendous harm potentially to the Black population if you adhere strictly to those guidelines. So I think the key in all of this is that the screening recommendations have to be tailored.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today about this really important topic. We really appreciate that you were able to take the time and speak very eloquently about everything that we spoke about today.
Oh, you too. Thank you. Thanks to your organization, because we need this. We need this awareness.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Enclave and at Enclave SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Enclave and Enclave State of the Science Summit, and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave On Air.